Hey there, Random Trek fans, or listeners, I guess it's presumptuous of me to think you're a fan. This is Scott McNulty, and before we jump into the show, I wanted to tell you that we are now in the Incomparable membership drive. That's right, this month you'll be hearing across all of your favorite Incomparable shows, us suggesting to you that you should become a member of the Incomparable. Why? Because you love us. You could sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly or any of the other fine podcasts on the Incomparable Network. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Random Trek, your entire contribution will come to me. Ha ha ha, and I will be rich, filthy rich, after a few fees are taken out for administrative handling. Now, I suggest, if you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you go ahead and check those boxes, check all the boxes, check somebody else's box, and don't even include Random Trek. And your contribution will be shared equally by everyone who you check on that support page. So please do. As a thank you, you might be thinking, well, what's in it for me, Scott? You will receive, as a member, lots of extra things. There's exclusive bonus audio, a bootleg podcast where you can hear episodes of shows right after they've been recorded without having to wait for the edited version to arrive, and a members-only community on Slack. I am on that Slack community, so if you wanted to chat with me in a text-based scenario, you could do that. Since this is pledge season, this month, many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members. Random Trek will have a bonus episode that is only for members. It will be pretty special, and I think you'll enjoy it. We are, in fact, going to be doing a Random Trek Total Party Kill, which is our D&D/role-playing game crossover, and we will be playing Star Trek Adventures, the Star Trek RPG. So look for that, members, at some point in the not-too-distant future. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. If you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So, if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. Thank you so much for listening and for even considering becoming a member of The Incomparable. And if you're already a member, thank you so much for being a member. And now, on with the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Cicero Holmes. Cicero, thank you for joining me.
Ah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
I'm excited to have a Chicagoan on, and I've spoiled your home city, but tell the people a little bit about yourself other than the fact that you live in or around Chicago.
Yeah, I currently live in Chicago. I guess I claim this as my home. I am originally from New York, so I am a New Yorker, born and bred.
As am I.
And yes. Oh, so it's always in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
The pizza's better. The Chinese food is better.
That's true. Oh, well, Yankees. That's a big thing, though. Chicago pizza versus New York pizza. That's a big divide.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that I can't just all out just claim Chicago as my home, because Chicagoans want me to adopt their pizza, and I just can't. I mean deep dish quiche, Italian quiche is great. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love it, but you know, pizza is meant to be folded and taken on the go, with the grease dripping into the brown paper bag that you got it out of.
I agree.
Thank you very much, sir. In addition to that, I am one of the co-hosts, I guess one of the founding co-hosts. Ooh. Of the Spawn On Me podcast. We're a podcast where we talk video games, and Blackness is hosted by myself, Khalif Adams, Sharif Jackson, and Tanya DePass. We're four Black people who are talking about video games in a very nuanced way. So you won't just hear us talk about this game sucks or what have you. We'll really kind of break down things. And we try to bring guests from the video game industry that are, you know, people of color are very interesting and have interesting conversations with them. We want to inspire the 12-year-old versions of ourselves to aspire to be video game creators. So that is one podcast I do. And the other podcast that I am doing that is more closely related to what we're talking about now is a show called Discovery Debrief, where we talk about the latest trek into the Star Trek universe, Star Trek Discovery. Yes, it is hosted by myself, Chris Clow, Zaki Hassan, and Rachel Clow. And we've had a great time doing it.
So what are your, boil it down, 30-second thoughts on Star Trek Discovery?
First season, strongest first season of Star Trek to date. Mm-hmm. But the last five episodes read like a crib notes of things that that transpired in the second half of the season. I think I felt like they ran out of money for episodes and just tried to cram everything in a little too quickly. Uh-huh. But nonetheless, still a great season and really, really great performances.
I concur. And I have said the same thing that you just said, that this was the best first season of Star Trek ever. And many people have been shocked and horrified because they claim that the original series first season may edge it out. And I can understand that, but I do think Discovery is certainly for modern Trek, the best modern first season of Star Trek.
If allow me, if you will, to crib a comment from the late, great Rick James, nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
That is true. It is true. Hosting a podcast in which I randomly watch episodes of Star Trek and talk about them with someone, every time I get an original series episode, it's a treat because there are so few of them. But then I am also reminded that it was a show that was on 50 years ago, and a lot of things have changed.
Yes.
I agree. Your opinions are correct. So good, we're on a good first foot here.
Yes, great minds and such.
Exactly, and of course that's a joke. Everyone who's listening who doesn't like Discovery, it's fine. Your opinions are valid as well. I could understand not liking it, but I thought it was very good. But before I continue to dig that hole that I've dug myself into, let's talk about more positive things. Now, you're a co-host of a Star Trek-themed podcast, so clearly you would consider yourself a Star Trek fan. It seems like a silly question to ask, so I will ask the follow-up question that I ask, which is, if you had to pick, because someone's asking you, i.e. me, what series would you say is your favorite Star Trek series?
Let's raise some more ire while we're doing all of this. The correct answer is always Deep Space Nine. And I know that that is ripe with controversy. However, not as controversial as this other thing that I'm going to say. Star Trek Enterprise is much, much maligned for being a bad series. Mm-hmm. It is much, much better than people give it credit for. A thing that people need to remember is that Star Trek is, to a fault, a series of its time. Each and every season, each and every show is a season of that time. It is like a time capsule for the tenor of the culture, American culture. And Enterprise does that.
That is true. I have pilloried, is that a word? I have slagged off Enterprise on multiple occasions. But I will say that it is better than people give it credit for. I don't know if I would go as far to say it's good, but it is better than people give it credit for.
Even bad Trek is good Trek.
That is true. And I will say something that ties it back to Discovery. So people got a little bent out of shape because Discovery is set before the original series, but it looks so different than the original series. And, you know, there are a variety of reasons why that is and why people don't like it. But I feel like if you look at Discovery as less of a prequel to the original series and more as a sequel to Enterprise, it feels a whole lot more natural.
So I ask
people who get upset to think of it that way.
Man, my eyebrows are raising so high on that comment, my hairline is receding. That is really, really profound, huh? See? I've never thought about that.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
But what do I know? I'm just a guy with a podcast who likes Discovery and kind of likes Enterprise. I'll watch Enterprise. Right. There's a cute dog. I like Dr. Phlox.
Right.
It's got plenty going for it. T'Pol.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm currently – so there is one series in all of Trek I have not seen from start to finish, mm-hmm. and that is Star Trek Voyager. So I am going currently – going through, this is at least two episodes a day of watching Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Voyager. Mm. Man, you know, Harry Kim gets a real raw deal. Because, like, the first season is basically, like, how can we hurt Harry Kim in this episode?
Don't you think he deserves it?
He kind of does. Like,
just a little bit.
Yeah. He is not the worst character because hands down, Kes is the worst character on that show.
Worse than Neelix?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess the both of them. Neelix does have redeeming qualities, and maybe it's because he's there longer.
He kind of grows on you like a fungus.
Yeah, he does. He does. And, you know, you just keep it around like a fungus. So, mm-hmm. Kes is a wart that you just want to remove.
I'm glad that he did. And then she leaves. My problem with Kes is that she's in a relationship with Neelix.
Yes.
Which is on multiple levels problematic for me because one, Neelix is awful. And two, Kes is like 4 years old.
I
don't understand.
She wasn't even. She left when she was 4 years
old.
Right.
She was
2 years old. She was 2 years old when he was robbing that cradle. He is the R. Kelly of the Delta Quadrant.
I do not approve, Neelix, if you're listening. I am frowning at you right now.
Yeah, he's terrible. And then their relationship just ends and you never even know about it. Like it ends off show. So like one episode they're together and then the next episodes they're not. And mm-hmm. you don't even know what happened. They never show them breaking up.
Yeah, you don't need to know. It's fine. It's better that you don't.
it probably was. It probably was.
So Deep Space Nine, obviously the correct answer for best Star Trek. Let me ask you this. Who is your favorite captain? So we've discussed series. I feel like captain is a harder question to answer. And it may not be, but I feel like it is.
Oh, man. It is. So, you know what? The hell with it. I'm just going to throw a curveball. My favorite captain is Saru.
Oh,
wow.
That is a curveball.
Wow. Yeah, let's do that. No one's ever given that answer.
Huh? That is correct.
So
what about Saru?
So the growth of Saru over the course of this first season of Discovery has been amazing. He went, you know, he was this fuddy-duddy kind of younger brother to Michael Burnham's older sis. Mm-hmm. And then really turned himself around. Like there was an episode where he was the acting captain for a little bit and he had to, computer Google the best captains and kind of get their traits together and all that other stuff. And mm-hmm. by the end of the first season, as the season ends, and they're on their way to Vulcan to find to get the next captain. And Saru is sitting there, kind of spoilers for Discovery. But I was upset that they were not giving the chair to Saru. Like he is the captain. He's earned the respect of not only Michael Burnham, but the rest of that crew. And has proven himself to be a capable of command. So Saru is you know, just because for shiggles, why not? Saru is my favorite captain.
And I think that's a solid choice. I enjoy Saru. Michael Burnham is a great character, so it's hard to pick someone other than Michael Burnham as my favorite character from Discovery. But Saru is a very close second, with Tilly being a close third.
Absolutely.
There's so many good characters on Discovery, and I think that is what makes – I think – so you look at Star Trek, and I've said this plenty of times, that it's all about the characters, right, and their interactions. So if you have a good set of characters, it can carry you pretty far – even if your stories perhaps are not as good as they could be. I feel like, and we'll bring this back to Enterprise, because I feel like Enterprise suffered on the character front.
It did.
because
for a long time
there were a bunch of kind of just bland characters there.
Yes,
and I'm including Captain Archer in that because I kind of think he's kind of a bland captain. Yeah. And so that's why I like Enterprise at least amongst Star Trek. There we go. But we're not here to talk about. We have not. This is perhaps a first. We have not talked at all about the series of which an episode we watched.
Yeah,
which is surprising because I feel like for me at least, and I'm not going to talk for you, Cicero, because you could talk for yourself. When I have this concept of kind of default Star Trek. Like when I think of Star Trek, what are the images that come to my mind? And the images that come to my mind when I think of Star Trek are immediately Captain Picard and the Enterprise D. TNG is my kind of default Star Trek.
It was, you know, by all accounts, for most people that are listening, the very first Star Trek that they were able to watch live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you were able to watch 66 Trek live, more power to you. Thank you for listening. You know, I remember sitting down and turning on channel. I think it was on channel 9. WWOR and not channel 11.
WPIX,
mm-hmm. where Star Trek, the TOS, would air right before, right after the Honeymooners every night.
I still miss those Abbott and Costello marathons they did on the weekends.
Yes, yes. Oh man, it was all great. It was, you know, TNG was like, oh man, there's new Trek. We get to watch it and they've got the theme from the movies. Like we're ready to go. And it was great. It was great to see a new group of diverse people out there great, you know, real great chemistry and not a lot of that the machismo that Shatner brought to Captain Kirk and brought to the chair to see Jean-Luc Picard, who was pragmatic and demure and was, you know, was led people in a way that felt like professorial.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to have him around.
Yes, he is more of a leader who inspires you because of his kind of authority and his knowledge, whereas Captain Kirk inspires you because you feel like he has this camaraderie with you. He's in it with you. He's gonna, you know, go down to a planet and punch an alien in the face for you.
That's right.
Captain Picard generally doesn't do that. Yes. And I often say I would not want to be. If I was like an ensign on the Enterprise and I got onto the turbo lift, and Captain Picard was there, I would be very nervous and I would probably just immediately get off because you don't want to be stuck in a turbo lift with Captain Picard.
No, you want to be stuck on a turbo lift with Riker.
Exactly.
You know,
he'll know who you are.
Exactly. He'll probably, you know, tell you some funny anecdotes, ask you about the one thing that he knows about you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Riker's that guy. He's everybody's buddy.
That's his job as first officer of the Enterprise, is to interface with the people and let Captain Picard solve the problems.
Right, and have a powerful beard.
Yes, a very powerful beard. I approve of beards. So people who are listening already know the episode we're going to talk about. It is TNG Season 4, Episode 17.
17.
Night Terrors. Ooh, this is... the one where everybody can't go to sleep and bad things happen. And Deanna Troi saves the day, kind of.
Yeah.
I guess she does, not even just kind of. She saves the day. She and Data together figure it out, save the day. I do have a problem. So I'm just going to jump immediately to the resolution of this episode in which Deanna has to enter into sleep and send a message to these aliens using the REM frequencies of sleep that are unique to Betazoids. When you say it like that, it sounds ridiculous. But
oh, but when you watch it, it's not at all.
Totally believable when you watch it. they figure out through the course of the episode the message they need to send to them. And these aliens have been saying, what have they been saying? Two eyes. One moon orbits or something like
two,
that. Right?
Two eyes in darkness, mm-hmm. and a moon circling with circles around it.
Yes. And they figure out that means hydrogen.
Yes. as Data goes through the big list of things, and she and Troy is like, wait, stop, go back. And he goes back. It's like, go back again. And he goes back again. He goes back a third time. And it's like, oh, hey, wait, what's the one thing that doesn't look exactly like everything else? That's it right there.
That's the one. And they figure out, oh, we need, does this mean they need hydrogen or they have hydrogen? And Troy, which I think makes common sense, they wouldn't be asking for the thing that they already have. Like, they would. It's clearly the thing they need. And so they need hydrogen. And so Data says, oh, tell them that we only have enough power to, you know, emit hydrogen for 2 minutes. So they need to immediately do whatever it is they're going to do. Right. And Troy says, well, that's very complicated. I have to say something very simple. And he's like, okay, well, just say something. And she spends, I don't know, she's in this dreamscape for like 3 minutes. And 2.5 minutes of that are her just saying over and over again, where are you? I need to find you. Where are you?
But she's not just saying that. She's doing the whisper yell, the regular talking. Where are you?
That is true.
I need to find you. As if speaking in that way allows your voice to carry even further.
In your dream. Which doesn't make any sense. My main problem, though, is she says, those are two long sentences. And then she says something else. So my thought is, why doesn't she just, she could have said something fairly complicated in the same time. I don't understand.
Yes.
But anyway.
Yes.
That's my main problem with this episode. Let's pause and thank our sponsor for this episode, Sci-Fi's new series, Krypton, which is set 200 years before the destruction of Superman's home planet, which is also known as Krypton. Discover the untold story of Superman's grandfather, Seg-El, as he fights to save his planet and his family's legacy, the House of El, from unimaginable forces. Filled with some very recognizable characters from the DC Comics universe and executive produced by David S. Goyer, you should watch Krypton on Sci-Fi. It premieres March 21st at 10 p.m., 9 p.m. Central, on Sci-Fi. Our thanks to Sci-Fi and Krypton for sponsoring Random Trek.
Well, so my question is, what did she wind up saying? Because she was – so they clearly were communicating in a way that was the most simple. They were using these very abstract things to talk about things that were very specific. Mm-hmm. The two eyes in darkness, Troy was able to ascertain that that meant that they were in a twin solar system, which is what they were in.
Right.
So a binary star system. So they were in this binary star system, which are the two eyes in the darkness. And she was able to then figure out that the moon circling around it was the imagery for hydrogen. So they were using this imagery, but she keeps talking to them in these complex sentences to try and figure out who they are and where they are, that she needs to find them. Why didn't she come up with some imagery of her own to communicate more effectively with these organisms?
She was sleepy. That's why.
Yes.
Very sleepy.
Very sleepy, yes.
So I didn't mean to jump to the end, but I was watching it and that annoyed me. Because I was like, you're saying so much, Troy. You could say something more complicated than Data told you, but you don't. So this is a kind of a typical Star Trek TNG episode where the ship gets captured in something and they need to figure out, like, none of the systems are working. And bad things happen. This is an unusual episode of Star Trek, though, especially TNG, because kind of creepy things happen, and generally TNG is not a creepy kind of show.
Yeah, it was kind of suspenseful, and they played the creepy music, there was that moment where, my favorite moment, of course, in the entire episode is Picard and Number One William Riker are in the turbo lift. They're on their way to the bridge. Picard confides in Riker that he's been, you know, he's really sleepy. They're both not at their best. Mm-hmm. And he tells Riker, you go ahead and get sleep. One of the two of us needs to be awake and aware for the sake of the rest of the crew at all times. You go to sleep. I'll go up to the bridge and I'll take the first shift. and Riker gets he gets off the or he tells the turbo lift to go to deck 8, which I need turbo lifts in my life. I have no idea how those things work. I think they're made by Willy Wonka because, you know, like they start going up and then I think they go sideways. I have no idea what's happening with those things. But Riker gets off. And as soon as Riker gets off, all the crazy shenanigans happen with Picard. And here is, you know, straight-laced Picard. And he's sitting on the turbo lift that's just going up to the bridge, and he feels like the walls are closing in on him, and he crawls on the ground and he screams and he puts his hands up in his face, and the doors open at the bridge and he's screaming bloody murder. And there's Worf and the rest of the bridge crew just standing there looking at him. That made me giggle like a schoolgirl. watching that moment. It was so much fun.
Yes, and he recovers in a very Picardian way, in which is he gets up, he adjusts his – he does the Picard maneuver and adjusts his little shirt there, and he walks out, and he was like, you know, as you were.
As you were.
Back into his ready room. He doesn't make eye contact. He doesn't explain anything. No, and – the critical thing that I have to point out is that no one asks him anything.
Nope.
They're all like, well, we're going back. We're not. No one mentioned the turbo lift episode.
Right. He said as you were.
That is all we need to know.
Yeah. But then – so then there's the moment the doctor. Why can't I think of the doctor's name?
Beverly Crusher.
Dr. Crusher. Dr. Crusher's in the room with the cadavers.
Oh, this is my favorite one.
From the USS Brat. Was it the Britannian?
The Britain.
Britain. Yes. I call it Brat for short. All us Starfleet vets, we call it just the USS Brat.
Yeah, it's common knowledge.
Yes. Yeah, it's a thing. So she's in there with all the cadavers. And then she starts, like, as soon again, she's in there with an assistant. She tells the assistant to go off and do something. The assistant leaves. And the second the assistant leaves, she starts hearing noise. Yeah, creepy music happens. Mm-hmm. She starts hearing noises like someone is moving from under the plastic sheets with all the cadavers in there. And there's like 30 of them in there. And, you know, she stops and she goes and she checks. She does the typical horror film tropes where she stops and she looks around and then she goes to another one and she checks it out and she hears the noise again. And then all of a sudden she turns around and all of the cadavers are now sitting up.
Oh, man. It was so creepy.
And it was so creepy. And she, you know, rightfully so, freaks out. She drops her data pad. But instead of running out like a sane person, she just backs herself into a corner with more of those stupid things sitting up. And I'm screaming. It was the one time I've ever screamed at the TV while watching Star Trek. Like, what the hell are you doing? Get out of there.
Well, she is a trained Starfleet officer. She knows that this is scientifically impossible. And she also knows that she's suffering from lack of sleep. And I really like her reaction. She closes her eyes and she says, This is not happening. This is not happening. And then she opens her eyes. And of course, she was right. The cadavers are laying back down. Right. Although a normal person would just scream and run out. That's what I would have done.
Right, exactly.
Because that is creepy.
Yes, without the Starfleet training. Although another really cool thing that happened in this episode is that Deanna Troi was talking about how she has trained with people who have had sleep deprivation problems, or she has like this dream therapy where she tells people to work through their dreams. Apparently, Deanna Troi is a dream warrior, and she was watching whichever Nightmare on Elm Street that was. She learned everything that she knew from that, and you know, now she can fight Freddy. So while she screams,
it's a good tactic to have at your disposal. The basic we're skipping around here, but so the basic plot here is that the Enterprise comes upon this ship, the USS Pretend, that has been lost for what, like a month or something, and no one can find it.
30 days.
The Enterprise finds it. They hail it. There's no answer. They scan it. There are seemingly no life forms, but it is an inconclusive scan. And Deanna says, "Oh, there are life forms, but I can't really tell what." So off they go to check it out. Deanna says, "I need to come with you," and everyone's like, "Okay." And so she comes. Everybody's dead except for a Betazoid that was on board. who I guess, I don't know why he was there. He was, oh, he's a scientific advisor, and he's catatonic. And so we find out through the course of the episode that the 34 people that were on the starship killed each other, basically, in a variety of horrifying ways. And this Betazoid is repeating these, like, their two eyes and a moon, one moon orbits, this kind of thing. And nobody knows what's going on. The Enterprise's power stops working, so they can't just fly away, and everyone can't go to sleep. So that's, in a nutshell, what it is. Yes. And then wacky things start happening. And of course, the first thing we notice happens is Miles O'Brien, who is always, as in Deep Space Nine, he was the character where they thought, what horrible thing can we do to Miles O'Brien? and they did so many horrible things to Miles O'Brien. This episode, not as horrible to him as it could be, but he is the first person we see that kind of succumbs to the lack of REM sleep, and he basically yells at Keiko because he thinks she's having an affair. And she thinks he's joking, and he is totally not joking.
Chief O'Brien was turning into Ike Turner.
That's true.
He was very, very upset.
He was, but he did the mature thing and he left and he went to Ted Forward he got out of control. And in another, I think, interesting interaction, he talks to some random dude we've never seen before, we will never see again, who's talking about all kinds of weird things happening on the ship. And Miles O'Brien's response is, psh, you're a Starfleet officer. You believe all this nonsense? To which my response is, Miles O'Brien, how long have you served on the Enterprise? Weird things happen on the Enterprise all the time.
This is the fourth season, bro. Where have you been?
This may be one of the least weird things that's happened in four seasons. So yet Miles is having none of it. He's like, I don't care about your ghost stories, kid. Just give me a drink, Guinan.
Exactly. It is such a weird episode. Like, so Ten Forward becomes like a genuine saloon.
That's
before
true.
Before this episode ends, there is a bar fight. Guinan pulls out a gun and shoots it in the air.
I thought that was the weirdest thing that happened in this episode. I love Guinan, so I'm all for Guinan, but it just seems odd that they would allow her to keep a giant rifle behind the, or that she would even think to need it on the Enterprise.
It was a souvenir.
I guess so. And then she just shoots it on the first level. And she says, that was level one. Do you want to try for level two? And
That was, Guinan is, she's a different species. You know, she's a race of mystical beings. There's very few of them. They lost their home world. But that was a black woman moment. Like, she turned into a black woman right then when she said, you want to try level two? I was like, oh man, that gave me chills. Like, that was the scariest moment of the damn show for me. Like, I felt like I was back at home. Like, no mama.
I most assuredly do not want to try level two, Guy, and I apologize. Right. I will sit here quietly and think about what I've done. My other question though is that, so she fires it and there's no like alarms go off or anything, because we have seen in Star Trek VI maybe when you shoot a phaser on a starship, alarms go off automatically, and as we know, when they sacrifice that pot in the kitchen, what's her name? The woman who isn't Christy Alley, but playing the same character, the same character.
Vaguely the same character, yeah.
It's all getting confused. But anyway, that doesn't happen. There are no Vulcans in this episode. Although I did think, obviously people cannot go to sleep. So Data is not affected. So clearly Captain Picard makes the right choice and says, Data, listen, you're going to probably save us all. So you're acting captain, which is a good choice. My other question is, so they say Betazoids have a different REM cycle or whatever. But there are a whole bunch of other aliens on the Enterprise that we do not see. That I guess we all assume that they also have the same REM cycles as humans, I guess.
Yeah, presumably so. I mean, the one other alien that we do get to see is Worf.
And who, he does not handle it well.
He does not handle it well. So a lot of this episode also reminded me of one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies, which is The Big Hit.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh man. Just a fantastic, terrible movie. Mark Wahlberg, Lou Diamond Phillips, Bokeem Woodbine, Avery Brooks.
So there are
several scenes. There's a scene in which, and this is a movie from a different age. It's late 90s, where there's a character in the movie named Gump, who has a stutter, and he is a kidnapper. And while he's trying to kidnap and get his ransom information out, he's stuttering. And Lou Diamond Phillips' character helps him along by saying the word. During this episode, as people were losing their ability to enunciate and think clearly, Data would come around and would fill in the blanks and would finish their sentences for them. Mm-hmm. So that made me think of The Big Hit and kind of laugh a little. There's another moment in the film, The Big Hit, where the kidnapper's father or the kidnappee's father is run out of money, and he is Japanese, and he's about to perform seppuku. And he's standing there and he's singing some Japanese song in a garb with a giant katana, about to kill himself when the phone rings, and he has to stop every time the phone rings. And that moment made me think of Worf, as Worf is sitting there with his knife and he's just beside himself because he realizes he has fear. He can't fight his dreams. And if he can't fight, if he has to live with fear, he'd rather be dead.
Yeah, and I don't know how I feel about that, because if it happens very quickly.
Yes.
It seems like Worf almost immediately just is like, well, I'm going to kill myself.
Right. Well, before he goes off back into his quarters, he's on the bridge. When they're trying to move, and none of the engines are working. Mm-hmm. And they realize that none of the engines are working. They have no propulsion. And then he's like, all right, well, there's no propulsion. I'm just going to walk off of the bridge. And nobody says anything. And he just gets up and he walks away. Yeah. And then Deanna realizes, oh, you know what? Worf just walked away. Let me go check on him.
That's unusual.
And she catches, yeah, and she catches him just before he kills himself. So that was great. And then pep talks him into not killing himself by letting him know the fact that he fears something is his biggest strength. It was inside of him. Yes,
which I don't know if that is true either, Worf. But it saves Worf. So yes. I am all for it because I like Worf.
Yes.
And this would have been a shocking episode if Worf killed himself.
Very special episode.
That's right. TNG. It would not have been good. And so it turns out, so not only are they not being able to use REM sleep because they don't know this, but there's another alien who's using broadcasting and disrupting their sleep patterns.
That is correct.
They can't get out of the Tychon's Rift, which is a thing that is like a spatial anomaly, of course it is, that siphons off your energy. So the more energy you put into it, to i.e. like warp out or impulse, it just sucks up all that energy. Yes. Unless you can, the only solution to get out is to have a big explosion, to overload it and fly away. But they don't have enough explosive stuff, I guess, on the Enterprise. And they can't replicate it because they've spent all of their energy trying to get out.
That's correct.
And so now they're stuck. And this is when they figure out the whole hydrogen thing and flooding and blowing up, and everybody gets out. It's very exciting. It's not actually that exciting.
It really isn't. I think things that are more exciting, if people are going to watch this episode now, things that are more exciting is pay attention to the Starfleet bedding.
Oh, yes. We have not spoken of that, but we should.
Yeah. So someone discovered bedazzling. I want to know who is responsible for the Starfleet bedding, because the sheets are like purple. mm-hmm. and sequined.
Yes.
And the pillows are silver sequined. So, like, maybe they're not getting REM sleep because light keeps reflecting back into their eyes and waking them up from their shiny-ass pillows. Like, what the hell is going on there?
And it can't be comfortable to lay your face on a sequin pillow.
Maybe there's some new sequins designs in the 24th century that we don't understand just yet. The other thing that was really interesting was the very beginning of the episode, like the first sign where we know that something's wrong is Counselor Troy has a nightmare. And, you know, or when she gets the first notification from the aliens as they're telling her the goofy story in the mm-hmm. in the green world, she wakes up and she jumps up with a start and she sits up in her bed. But it looked like she fell asleep after going out on a date. She was wearing like this beautiful pink thing with a choker. Like, what kind of pajamas are these?
they're
like
beta Z pajamas.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, wow. Like,
I have a couple of theories about what people wear on Star Trek, because I feel like many people join Starfleet because they have no idea how to dress themselves.
Okay,
so they just need to use the uniform.
All right,
and then when they are off duty, they have to wear something. And they are so overwhelmed. See, this is the thing. The replicators mean that you can literally wear anything. You can have access to unlimited amounts of fashion. So you could have any combination of anything and any material, which is, you know, the paradox of choice. You're paralyzed by choice. So then you just – I feel like they just randomly pick things. So yes. Counselor Troy was feeling sleepy, and she just randomly picked like a choker and a very lovely top, and she went to sleep under her sequined pillows and sheets, which she also randomly picked because there are just too many choices.
I mean, that's as good an answer as any, I guess. I guess I would replicate like a silk zoot suit.
Exactly, because you could.
With a hat, because I could. Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing is that it would fit perfectly because the computer can scan you and it will just give you bespoke a silk zoot suit. And why would you wear anything else?
That is so true.
See?
That is so true.
These are the things I think about when I'm watching Star Trek episodes because I'm insane. And so this episode, weird. It also kind of ends abruptly, right? They blow up the thing with cooperation from the aliens. The Enterprise gets thrown out of the rift, and the alien ship, which looks kind of cool, also gets thrown out. But
was that a ship or was it like a blue asteroid? I mean, what the hell was that?
I assumed it was a ship.
Thing?
I don't know. Yeah. But the big thing is like they don't try to talk to them.
No.
They just leave.
Yep. Let's get the hell out of here, Chewie. Bunch of Chewie.
And isn't the whole point of the Enterprise to seek out new life and new civilizations? Shouldn't they want to maybe, you know, we're all sleepy. I know that. But,
right.
But wait, you go to bed and Data can maybe have first contact with these wacky aliens.
No,
nope,
you know,
they just
maybe
leave.
Another time. Yep.
Yeah, we got to go.
Yeah, we got to go to Starbase 220
and sleep for a while. Yes. Right. And so I just was perplexed. And that's literally how it ends. Data sends Captain Picard to bed. And they go off to a starbase, and we never hear of these dream aliens again. Although, as Cicero was saying, Voyager has several kind of dream-based episodes, so perhaps these aliens end up in Voyager, and Chakotay has some guided dreaming, and there's some vague Native American iconography that helps him solve something.
Scott, don't you mean Indian?
No, I certainly do not.
Because they definitely say it a lot.
It was a different time. That's my favorite tidbit about Voyager, which I've read somewhere that they hired someone to be the consultant for all of the Native American stuff that they wanted to put in here, because they had the best intentions of being accurate, but apparently whoever they hired, they didn't really do a background check, and the person they hired didn't know anything about Native American cultures. So they just have this awful, like, it's the worst of both worlds. They're paying someone who's telling them complete crap. Yes. And then they produce this awful kind of mishmash of nonsensical Native American stuff that they were thinking, probably patting themselves on the back because they're doing such a great job.
Yep. Zach Morris is trash. So
exactly. So speaking of trash, what did you think of this episode, Night Terrors?
It was fun to dip into to TNG. It was a weird episode. It was very creepy. Just being able to sit and marvel at some of the fashion and set design choices in this episode made me laugh. I just love Trek, so I'll watch any episode at any given time.
Yes, this episode is not trash. It was just a funny segue. It's fine. Yes. It's one of these episodes of Star Trek where somebody had one idea. What if people can't go to sleep? And they wrote a 44-minute show about that.
That is correct.
And I don't know if it deserved 44 minutes. I would have perhaps liked, because often Star Trek has an A plot and a B plot. There was no B plot in this episode. I think this episode could have used a B plot. I don't know what it would have been, but
there was no A plot either.
that is true. That is a good point. It could have been better, is what I'll say.
Yeah. Yes.
But I did enjoy the creepy scenes and seeing Commander Riker's pajamas. So
yes.
He also has a lovely matching blue wacky pajamas. So good for him.
Yes, exactly. And snakes in his bed.
Oh boy, let's not talk about snakes in the bed. I forgot about that. But what I won't forget, Cicero, is that you joined me for this lovely discussion. Thank you for talking about Night Terrors with me.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. It was definitely a pleasure being on, and you have a friend in me.
Oh, that's nice. I feel like we should sing now.